Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Activity is increasing at the Mount Veniaminoff volcano on the Alaska Peninsula. Alaska Volcano Observatory geologist Chris Way-Thomas tells KDLG that the mountain is producing lava on its south flank.
It's been producing a lava flow on the south flank of that intracaldera cone. It's about 800 to 850 meters in length. And there have been some minor ash emissions as well.
Lava extruding from the mountain is visible from the air and Perryville, but Way-Thomas says it's highly unlikely that ash will reach the village or Chignik communities at the current level of activity. Three other Alaska Peninsula volcanoes are also showing signs of unrest. PFAS contamination was the focus of a U.S. Senate subcommittee hearing this week that brought together government officials and citizens from a growing number of communities like Fairbanks and North Pole, where groundwater has been polluted by perfluorinated or PFAS chemicals from firefighting foams. Committee member Senator Jean Shaheen summarized the national PFAS problem.
This is an issue that affects tens of millions of people across the country. The cost of cleanup to address this is tens of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know yet what the long-term health impacts are.
Shaheen is from New Hampshire, home to Pease Air National Guard Base in Portsmouth, where groundwater is contaminated with PFAS. Andrea Amico, co-founder of the group Testing for Pease, pushed for consistency in government agencies' approach to PFAS contamination.
Why is Vermont lowering a standard to 20 parts per trillion for five different PFAS when the EPA is saying 70 parts per trillion for two different PFAS? And then we're seeing New Jersey propose lower standards. We're seeing Massachusetts and Connecticut take five different PFAS into consideration for their 70 parts per trillion. So it's very confusing for community members, and it's also very alarming. What are these states seeing? What science are they analyzing that they're coming to these different numbers? We need a much more consistent and coordinated approach.
There are thousands of PFAS chemicals, and Alaska is one of the states that recently changed its health advisory level to include more of the compounds under the EPA threshold. The EPA number is based on just two common PFAS chemicals, but the director of the agency's Office of Ground and Drinking Water, Peter Gravatt, told the committee the EPA stands behind it.
We believe that our health advisories are supported by the strongest science.
Gravatt said the EPA plans to release a national PFAS management plan by the end of the year, which could include a recommendation that PFAS chemicals be classified as hazardous substances, a designation that would empower the EPA to better address the problem.
The authority to both order cleanup actions at contaminated sites and also recover costs that are expended by the agency for those actions.
Gravatt cautioned the designation would take years to finalize. In the meantime, questions remain about human health effects of PFAS. Linda Birnbaum with the National Institutes of Health testified that research reveals statistically significant associations between PFAS exposure and specific health problems.
These include potential effects on children's cognitive and neurobehavioral development, immune system dysfunction, endocrine disruption, obesity, diabetes, lipid metabolism, and cancer.
Birnbaum pointed to the water-soluble chemicals' long-term persistence both in the environment and human bodies. New Hampshire's Andrea Amico told the committee there needs to be more health screening.
Blood testing for impacted community members, and we also need to provide medical monitoring, which is a program that folks can participate in with their physicians to better understand or to better monitor their health in the setting of the exposure.
PFAS chemicals are used in a wide range of products, and most of the general public tests positive for them at low levels. Ingestion of PFAS through water contaminated by firefighting foams is a common exposure pathway. PFAS firefighting foams have long been required by the FAA, but PFAS-free types are being developed, and Senator Gary Peters of Michigan said a switch to them will be mandated.
We're going to be changing that as we move the FAA reauthorization forward, as we look at alternatives.
The FAA bill was recently passed by the U.S. House and now goes to the Senate. The Senate committee working on the PFAS issue will continue to take public testimony through October 11th. Seasonal maintenance is scheduled to end next month on some interior roads and highways. The State Department of Transportation says the annual shutdown is set for October 1st for the Tofte-Tanana Road between Manly and the Yukon River and on the Eureka Rampart Road from the Elliott Highway to the Village of Rampart. seasonal maintenance on three other interior roadways, the Denali and Taylor Highways, and the McCarthy Road, ends October 15th. A DOT release notes that the McCarthy Road may be plowed periodically this winter so crews can access and clear the McCarthy runway. The DOT says all the roads will officially reopen next spring when maintenance resumes. The Haynesboro Assembly is considering the permit for a tour company that had a fatal accident this summer. Former Alaska Excursions employees complained about the company's safety practices months before a man drowned on a canoe tour. KHNS's Henry Licio reports.
Assemblyman Tom Morfitt has been urging the Haynesboro to consider revoking the permit for Alaska Excursions after Stephen Todd Willis drowned during a tour of the Davidson Glacier in July. At a meeting Tuesday, Assemblyman Tom Morfitt moved to ask Alaska Excursions owner Robert Murphy if he intends to renew the permit for the canoe tour at Glacier Point. Assemblyman Sean Mady countered that the company hasn't even applied to renew its permit.
If we go to one specific permit holder, I could see how that would be seen by any attorney worth their degree as discrimination or, you know, maybe even harassment. The ball's in his court to see if he's willing to renew.
Morfitt responded that the Alaska Excursions tour permit is different given the company's history.
I think we owe it to the man who died to stop and consider this company's record, which was brought to us through the testimony of a dozen former employees that said something bad is going to happen, and we ignored it.
In February, former canoe guide Alton Smith wrote a letter to the Haynesboro Assembly detailing canoe maintenance issues. He said that the most dangerous part of the canoe tour was the risk of an outboard motor failing above the rapids of the Davidson Glacier River. Alaska Excursions owner Robert Murphy has denied the claims of former employees and said that the company has been reviewing safety protocol and maintenance practices over the last few months. In an interview with the state troopers, Murphy stated that the engine of the canoe that capsized was new in May and had been tested regularly. The borough manager has the authority to revoke permits in Haynes. Borough manager Deborah Schnabel said that she did not revoke the Alaska Excursions tour permit immediately because the state troopers' report on the incident did not indicate negligence.
I myself, as a tour operator, suffered a death of a client. Things happen, and if we are not willing sometimes to consider that not every death that occurs is something that could have been prevented if this, if that, then we don't move very far.
Ultimately, the assembly voted against Morfitt's motion to ask Murphy whether or not he intends to renew the tour permit. However, the assembly did direct the borough manager to look further into the issue and seek legal advice on the matter. In Haynes, I'm Henry Licia.
And I'm Dan Bross.